I'm joined from London now by two women. One wants to get into your head and the other into your purse. They're experts in what they call chicanomics, which is all about helping women manage their finances. So if you prefer to splurge rather than save and want to mend, not spend, the error of your ways, well, the authors of Chicanomics, that's Karen Pine, a professor in psychology, and also Simone Gnessen, I hope I have that right, who is a financial coach. Good, very good. They join me now to share their expert knowledge, and you're both very welcome to the program. Karen, I will start with you. Your book, Chicanomics, it looks at the way women manage their money. How do women's attitudes to money differ to men's, in that I'm assuming they do?
Yes, obviously there are ways in which they're similar, but the main difference we've found is that women are actually much more emotional about money, so they will often spend for emotional reasons rather than on the basis of something, you know, going to buy something that they need. Women tell us that they use shopping as a palliative when they're feeling a bit upset or depressed or stressed. So I think that was one key difference that came out of our research and from talking to women.
And would they talk about money less than blokes would?
Yeah, women tend to switch off more in relation to money, particularly around kind of talking money jargon. So if you mention pensions or investments, they're less inclined to want to talk about it.
God, I sometimes feel like I must be a bit of a woman, because I never want to talk about those things either. I mean, the thing is that, like, you know, you do say that retail therapy is a myth. I mean, like, it's not. I know 1,000 women who, like, they don't feel good, off they go and buy things.
That's right. We don't say retail therapy is a myth. It goes on. But the idea that it's therapeutic is really
right. Now I see what you mean. Right.
Because it's short-term therapy, because you get a bit of a boost and a thrill and a kick and feel really good having gone shopping. But actually, the aftermath of it can be a bit of a letdown. And women tell us they feel a bit depressed afterwards. Sometimes they feel ashamed. They feel guilty about how much they've spent. So that's not really good therapy.
No, but maybe not. Okay, listen, Simone, let's try it this way then. What is it about women and shopping? I mean, like, I've got a statistic here. The UK Office for National Statistics says that 1 in 4 women leave the home to shop and spend more than 8 years of their lives shopping. So if they do it, is this like taking some kind of placebo that simply doesn't work? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, they're shopping to satisfy perhaps an emotional void, or it could be that they're responding to something that's going on in their life. And that's not actually resolving any problems. In fact, quite often it makes matters worse.
Okay, because you do say here, like, with the survey of 700 women, here's just some of the findings. Look, 60% had bought something on impulse, 50% almost had succumbed to a special offer, 1/3 had parted with more money than they could afford, almost as many had bought something they would probably never wear or use, almost half confessed to going out for one thing but coming back with something completely different, more than 75% confessed to using shopping as a way of cheering themselves up, but sadly, for lots of them, it had the opposite effect. Now, that's what you contend after talking to 700 women. So, Karen, are women more, I don't know, materialistic than men, or do they just buy more because more advertising is probably directed at them?
Well, the advertising point's an interesting one. I think you're absolutely right. There's an awful lot of pressure on women to have what's the latest in this season, you know, and with these messages that say, you're worth it, or you deserve it. I think they're kind of seduced into believing these messages and into thinking that these things will make them feel better, even though, as you say, and they often have the opposite effect. And then we've heard from lots of women who said they buy things and only to get home and find they've already got something in the wardrobe that's exactly the same, that's still got the label on it. So those statistics about impulse purchases often had nothing to do with what women needed, but that they were swept along and seduced into shopping for the wrong reasons.
Well, then, being swept along and seduced, Simone, the internet, has that made shopaholics even more crazy, more stupid, more eager?
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you, people talk about secretive shopping, and that you can do with the internet, that nobody needs to know what you're doing. I mean, you can pretend to be working at the time, but you're still shopping. So it gives you more opportunity. You can come home in the evening, you can shop, you know, and you can think that you're bargain shopping as well. You can go onto eBay, and that could be just as dangerous.
I love that bit of a kind of a measure of just how far you might be or how crazy it might be. Anyone who knows their credit card number by heart is spending too much money online. That is so true. Karen, yeah. Talk to me about the concept that, you know, you guys introduced in the book called personality, P-U-R-S-E, analogy. Apparently the state of your purse says a lot about your relationship to money, right?
Yeah, we put that in as a bit of fun, as a lot of the things in the book are for fun, to really break down the fear that women have about money. So that was one example where we said, hey, why don't you look in your purse and see what that tells you about your attitude to money. And if you're just shoving things in there randomly, loads of old receipts and old bits of paper and still foreign coins from your last holiday, that might suggest that your financial life is a bit shambolic. So that was the point we were making there, that really it's a barometer of your whole attitude to money, what your purse looks
like. Well, then it's a barometer of every woman I've ever known, because it says,
is it really?
Is it bulging with ancient faded receipts and out-of-date membership and business cards, or is it a model of neat organisation? It's the former every time.
Well, perhaps you're picking the wrong women.
Maybe I am, but like basically what you're saying
be.
Is...
Hold on, it can be a good starting point to sort out your finances.
If you sort out your purse, you sort out money management, do you? It's a starting point. It's a start.
Sorting out your filing is a very good start, because lots of people can't find anything. So if you ask them, you know, how much you spend on gas and electricity and whatever, even finding those documents are really hard. So one of the starting points is just tidy up the filing. Even don't create filing from the past, just from now on.
But you're asking me to believe that the person with the neatest desk is the best worker, and I haven't always found that to be true. Simone, you do have a tip in the book on how women should calculate the real cost of something. Like you say,
if they work out how much it costs if they translate it into their hourly wage, then it helps them see that, God, this is costing me, you know, I'm having to work 5 hours in order to pay for this.
Right, so there's something good, that's a good practical step, because like you say, you strip money of its emotional significance and then you view it in a more functional way. And you're less likely to get stupid impulse stuff, etc. Yeah, that's true. So, Karen, you do give tips in the book advising women on how to cope with the dependency on retail therapy. Can you share us some of these and let's see if we can learn from them?
How to cope with the dependency?
Well, like the 7 laws of Chiconomics.
Oh, yeah. Well, the 7 laws of Chiconomics deal with taking emotional control and knowing how your emotions affect your spending. So if you know why you spend and what your triggers are, then you might be able to deal with them or find other things to do when you're upset or angry. Mm. We talk about going beyond beliefs and challenging any self-limiting beliefs that you have around money. That inner voice that says, oh, I'm lousy with money, or I was never any good with maths. Sometimes women use that as a blocker to not dealing with financial things. That's another of the laws. The 3rd one is spend with power. That is, make spending decisions for the right reasons and don't let other people persuade you into spending money and parting with it. We talk about having goals and planning your life, having a life plan so that your money fits in with it. We talk about looking debt in the face, not being frightened and leaving those bills unopened. It really is about facing up to what you owe, deciding how you're going to pay it back. Law 6 is sharing financial intimacies. That's really getting up close and personal with your partner or your loved ones.
Yeah,
not
don't bury it away,
Absolutely. Talk openly and honestly about money. It's amazing what a taboo it is. And the very last law is no tomorrow comes, because you've got to take action now if you want to have a secure future.
And take action for a secure future, would that be like, would that include, you know, the idea of saving for a rainy day? Or suddenly something goes wrong with the fan belt in your car and it's going to cost £800 to get it fixed?
Well, all of that, yeah. We suggest that people put aside emergency savings, because if you think about why you take out debt, often it's because of an occasional expense that you hadn't actually catered for, maybe something like Christmas, which comes up every single year, but yet we don't put anything away for it.
Right.
So it's around occasional expenses that come up maybe once a year or unplanned, unforeseen.
And you also say, by the way, that research shows that compulsive buyers have lower self-esteem than any other type of shopper, so it goes right into the realm of all sorts of lifestyle choices and the kind of hedge you've got, as much as the kind of purse you've got, i.e. you've got to have pretty high self-esteem.
Yeah, self-esteem is very important. I think it just emphasises the point that managing your mind is key to managing your money.
Yeah.
And that's what Chiconomics is about. It's about a blend of psychology and personal finance, really.
Okay, well then, if you've given us kind of a 7-step programme there in some ways of just like, you know, a test, if you like. Karen, how can somebody make the right decision on whether to buy or not to buy? What kind of questions does one need to ask oneself?
Well, it depends what you're buying, but what we would always emphasise is don't make the decision on the spot. whatever it is will probably still be there tomorrow, and we're all a bit prone to what we call instant gratification. Mm. I want it now, I've got to have it. So one great tip we give to people is walk away, go home, think about it, even ask for something to be put by in a shop if you really feel you must have it, but don't buy it there and then. Give yourself that cooling off period. Be surprised what a difference it makes.
Okay, and like you also say, like, it's very simple, but like, do you like it rather than love it?
That's right. You know, is it just, are you just buying it because you want something to wear on Saturday night?
Right,
so
exactly.
Again, or is it a long-term decision? And is it because it's hot and it's in fashion, or because it seems cheap?
But and does it draw really attention to your to parts of your body that you might have kept covered before, and you maybe really should play down and don't get, and don't get kind of lost in the rush?
Or is it a bargain and you're just buying it because it's in the sale?
Right, well, of course, that's the biggest, that's like the ones, I mean, like, you, do you know those 15-minute ads on TV, those kind of ones that you've got to send away for this kind of onion grinder right now, and you get a free steak knife with it kind of thing. I know at least two people, not a million miles in my life, who would go, oh, I must get one of those, what's the number? Anyway.
That's right, but they never knew they need one, did they, until they saw that.
That's because they didn't, and they still don't. Anyway, Simone, how can people who love to spend, then, curb their spending? I mean, like, you know,
As we say, it's about finding other things that replace that feeling. So,
like, for instance, like, you go out, would you leave the credit card at home and only bring cash?
Yeah.
That's one of the tips we give in the book, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, because credit cards detach you from your money. It doesn't feel like real money when you're spending with your credit
card. Shopping with a friend detach you from your money because you get convinced.
Ooh. You know, spending other people's money is so easy, isn't it? And your friends often love it.
Oh, go on, buy it there, Mary. Go on, it'll look lovely on you.
You look gorgeous in that. Oh, you must have
exactly.
it.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
But of course, there may be some friends that are good to go shopping with who actually support you to stick to a budget. So if you're going out with a specific purchase in mind, you might want to take somebody with you that you know that will be good.
And you know something also, though? Like, if there's a coffee shop with a bun in the actual big department store you go to, you might be better off going for the coffee and the bun first. Like
yes.
don't go on an empty stomach and feeling bad.
That's right.
Yeah, don't go food shopping when you're hungry, because you're really going to fill that trolley up.
Exactly. Now, listen, Simone, you say in the book that, you know, lots of women feel incapable of handling their money and related paperwork. Related paperwork. Why might so many women feel like that? Get back to the very beginning of this, the difference.
I think it's quite traditionally finance is seen as part of a man's world and less so for women. And women do get intimidated by the financial world, by jargon. Most of the financial advisors out there are men. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a kind of pushy, salesy environment, traditionally, not always, but that's intimidating for women. So I think women just kind of walk away from that and would prefer to try and handle things on their own or bury their head in the sand. So that's what we're trying to overcome, really, is to make it more accessible, demystify it. We've used language that helps explain all the terminology around finance and helps women understand it.
Because, you know, it's funny, you do say at one stage, whatever our destiny, the one thing we're all going to encounter in our lives is money, yet it's not something we learn how to do in school. Would you say that in such a way that you bemoan the fact that we don't learn that in school? And we really, 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 really should.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fundamental thing. We're taught maths, we're taught algebra,
yeah.
We're taught, you know, differentiation, and, you know, why do we need to know that? We need to know how to write a cheque, we need to know how to balance a bank statement, you
and
know.
If we know nothing else, if we just understood compound interest, and if they taught us that at school, we'd understand why our credit card debt goes up and up, even though we're paying a bit off every month.
Right, I haven't.
And
a
we'd
clue
understand the difference, you know.
And also start getting excited even about investments and savings. So, you know, the other extreme.
Yes.
We actually get to like it. Wow.
Yes, it can be exciting.
Okay, well then, what is, Simone, standing in the way of women achieving financial success? Are women responsible for putting up the barriers that we talk about themselves?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about our minds, what we're telling ourselves. I mean, for some people, they feel that there's no capability of them being rich or wealthy or just... keeping their head above water, even. So I think a lot of it is about taking control of our mind, and that's the biggest barrier, the emotional obstacles, and the self-limiting beliefs that we have. those are the things that need to be overcome in order to make this work.
All right, well, then if many women fail to get to grips with their finances because their underlying perception of themselves in relation to money is distorted, practical solutions can't just help alone. You have to tackle the underlying problem, is what you say. So, Simone, we all know lots of women love the immediate gratification of shopping. We've kind of come to that conclusion there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're cured of anything. Is it fair to say that lots of women don't like to think about things like pensions, despite the benefits to be gained through delayed gratification?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, they may not necessarily understand the benefits of it. But also, how is the money being invested? You can't see it. It's not tangible. I think women particularly like to see tangible investments, so they would be more keen to perhaps to buy a second property. But putting money into a pension doesn't feel... It's gone out there. It's out of their radar, and they don't understand it enough. And I think that could be quite frightening.
Well, I tell you one thing, if you're living in Ireland in the last few days, that second property solution is not a goer, I'll tell you. Anyway, like, the thing is, I'm beginning to come to the conclusion that at the end of this conversation, I now know that I am a woman. Simone, women need to plan for their pension in different ways to men, you say. Why is that?
Well, what we're saying is that women generally live longer than men. And they take, they more often take career breaks because of family commitments, caring responsibilities. So they need to be, while they are working and capable of saving, they need to be saving that much more. So the pot of money they have in retirement has to be more because they're living longer, and they have to pay in more while they are able to save, because they may not be able to save for their entire working life.
And I did see a thing in one of the English broadsheets yesterday where they had a few examples of people as well, that women tend to lose an awful lot more money after a divorce. Is there any real reason for that, or is it just that the bloke is in charge and often they put loads of money away before they get divorced without telling the wife, who's no longer going to be the wife, so some of that, she might get half, but still the other half is carrying the table.
Yeah, traditionally, it's men that make the bigger investments, and if it's been done in his name, then it may well be the assets on his side.
What a lovely way of saying men are bastards. Okay, Simone, before we say goodbye, what tips then can you give to women and men about how to protect themselves for the future? You have to start saving, I presume.
Well, yeah, I mean, the main thing is to raise awareness. Actually start looking at where your money's going. So first of all, what assets you've got, what liabilities you've got, add up the debt, because that's what a lot of people don't face. And then look at your monthly income and spending. How much have you got coming in? And how can you divvy that up in such a way that you have the affordability to be able to pay off debt and to put money towards other goals, like saving for the future?
Okay, and also, like, you know, the money pages in the weekend newspaper is the thing that I throw in the bin before I even pick the paper up. You would suggest don't throw it in the bin, take a look at it.
Yeah, what we're trying to encourage is different behaviour. We've got lots of do something different exercises throughout Sheconomics. So one idea is to just start reading, start reading some financial press, maybe signing up for newsletters for different websites where you get stuff into your focus, because we get what we focus on, and if we're focusing on debt, that's what we're likely to get more of. So we want you to focus more on money, but in a positive way, not in a negative way.
Okay, well, Sheconomics is published by Headline. It costs in and around €11. Karen Pine and Simone Gnessen, and you do pronounce the G, co-authors of Sheconomics. Thank you both very much for talking with us on the programme this evening. Thanks very much, Karen and Simone. Good luck.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye.